under fire, they remain strong, insisting the world must not ignore their struggle.
Today, as you saw, we came for a peaceful stand, completely harmless. Yet the Israeli military opened fire. We pose no threat. Our situation is catastrophic. We are dying outside our camps and homes. Some people are living in mountains, tents, or paying extremely high rents. We want to return to our homes. Even if only one room remains, we want to go back.
For the people of Nur Shams, return is not a political slogan. It is a survival. After nearly a year of forced expulsion, their message remains the same. They will endure the danger, but refuse to surrender the place they call home. Standing here among the crowds in Nur Shams, you feel the exhaustion, but also the determination. Families who have lost everything are gathered shoulder to shoulder, insisting on a simple right to return to their homes they were forced to leave. Naqa Hamid, Tul Kerem, Occupied West Bank.
In May and June of this year, Israeli actress Gal Gadot was in the British capital London to film her latest Hollywood movie. Seven pro-Palestine activists caught wind of the location of the film shoot and proceeded to loudly protest outside the site on numerous days, successfully disrupting the filming and imposing large costs on the production of the movie. Gadot, a former member of the Israeli military who took part in the 2006 aggression against Lebanon, is now a Hollywood actress using her platform to advance pro-genocide propaganda on behalf of the regime.
The seven activists were summoned to Westminster Magistrates Court last month. They faced charges of harassment and wrongfully and unlawfully obstructing access to a workplace after pressure was exerted on authorities by pro-Israel lobbyists in the UK. But on the eve of a major hearing on Tuesday, the accused had all charges dropped, with security forces saying that they would receive no further action.
The outcome represents a major victory for the activists, dubbed the Gal Gadot Seven, who in recent months have been facing heavy pressure from the British state, which critics say is acting on behalf of the Zionist lobby in the UK.
I think it's really important to stand up to these Zionist intimidation tactics to show them that A, it won't work, and B, you know, we always have to remember what we're doing this for. You know, we're doing this for the Palestinians, and, you know, it's a very small ask of me, for example, to forfeit 5% of my privilege so that a whole people don't have to lose everything.
The initial court hearing was adjourned due to Jewish extremists attempting to sit in the court's public gallery in order to learn of the activists' home addresses. Sadly for the extremists, they've been deprived yet again of an opportunity to gain key intelligence that would enable them to step up the campaign of intimidation against pro-Palestinian organisers that they're waging in collaboration with the British state.
They're doing this to discourage us, to showcase where they're failing as a state in Britain and across the world, because we are showcasing their flaws, and what we are doing is only right because we are showcasing the truth, because you can't hide it forever.
Critics have pointed to Gadot's wooden performances on the big screen, raising questions about nepotism and whether she's only been given high-profile acting roles in order to promote propaganda on behalf of the genocidal Israeli regime. In this case, the activists not only disrupted the film shoot, but also successfully beat the trumped-up criminal charges they were faced with. Issa Kadhimi, London.
An article published on Tuesday by the Italian daily Il Manifesto exposed a scheme through which Israel has been cleansing Palestinians out of war-ravaged Gaza for months. The article, titled One Way Trip, describes how Palestinians have been illegally evacuated from the Strip through flights organized by a shadowy NGO that goes under the name of Al-Majd Europe. They were taken by bus from southern Gaza's Rafah to the Karim Abu Salem crossing, where they were checked, then transferred to the Israeli regime's Air Force base of Ramon in the Negev Desert, without Israeli authorities stamping their travel documents. On Tuesday, Press TV reached the author of the article for more information.
Generally, the Gazans themselves try to contact somebody who helps them leave the localities left in ruins. Strangely enough, this time they are contacted from private numbers by people who have the Gazans' phone numbers. Also, the people who contact the Gazans change every time, and this is very unusual. We checked Al-Maj Europe website, and it appears to be very suspicious. The organization is not based in Germany, as stated by some media agencies.
It is impossible to know how many Palestinians have been deported or illegally evacuated so far. What we know is that tens of Palestinian families have boarded these planes provided by the shadowy Al-Maj Europe organization without knowing their final destination. They paid $1,500 to $5,000 each, the price for children, the same as adults.
All flights carrying Palestinians taking off from the Israeli Air Force base had African and Asian countries as destinations. One of them reportedly went through Budapest in Hungary, a EU member state, last summer.
No official record of these trips must remain. Palestinians are told not to talk about these trips with anybody. There is no international control on these transfers. The UN and the UNRWA are completely kept in the dark. And the fact that not even the European Union did some background checks on these trips when one of the flights stopped over in Budapest should be a matter of concern for all of us Europeans. It could be our turn to be treated the same way in the future.
An Italian lawmaker has opted to take some action against what appears to be a fraudulent scheme.
I will file a parliamentary question on these evacuations that look very much like ethnic cleansing or deportations. Gazans don't even know where they are taken, and there are many doubts on the organization that is commissioned to run this marquee activity.
A flight carrying 153 Palestinians from the Strip arrived in South Africa on Thursday. The South Africa Foreign Ministry called the flight a part of a clear agenda to cleanse Palestinians out of Gaza and the West Bank. Max Civili, Rome.
The relationship between the United States and Saudi Arabia continues to embarrass and undermine claims that Washington actually cares about human rights. United States President Donald Trump rolled out the red carpet for Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman for the first time in 8 years, ever since he became an international pariah for the gruesome murder of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi. When asked about Khashoggi, Trump stunningly defended bin Salman.
You're mentioning somebody that was extremely controversial. A lot of people didn't like that gentleman that you're talking about. Whether you like him or didn't like him, things happen. But he knew nothing about it, and we can leave it at that.
Khashoggi's murder highlighted a number of reactionary ideas. Pro-monarchism, anti-free press, an overly powerful executive, use of invasive Israeli tracking spyware, state impunity, ignoring human rights abuses for domestic and personal gain, and more.
Yeah, it just shows the hypocrisy of the United States. You know, we talk a big game about freedom of speech, but, you know, we support people who kill journalists, and nowhere is that more obvious than in Gaza, where hundreds of journalists have been killed.
Trump and bin Salman have had weeks of talks about normalizing relations with Israel, which Riyadh appeared on the verge of doing until the start of the Gaza genocide.
Well, this is about so-called Israel, not a normal country at all, completely the wrong thing to do. I hope Saudi Arabia changes their mind. There's nothing normal about, quote, Israel.
Trump continued to provoke fear about Iran, utilizing Iranophobia to push the sale of F-35 jets to Riyadh.
Bin Salman promised to invest $1 trillion in the United States. Many say that's not a credible figure, as it's essentially the size of Saudi Arabia's entire sovereign wealth fund. Others say that it's a reminder of how the House of Saud stays in power in Arabia in the first place. Ramin Mazahiri, Washington, D.C.
In the dim corridors of Gaza's collapsing health system, thousands of Palestinian patients have endured a slow, silent struggle for survival. Many never made it out. According to local health workers and humanitarian monitors, around 10,000 patients have died, not because of illnesses, but because the care they needed simply never arrived, medications that ran out, equipment that never came, or medical evacuation permits that remained pending until it was too late.
I have been injured for 3 months. I am not getting better, but worsening. I need urgent medical evacuation, as hospitals here can't deal with my complicated situation. I suffer from the lack of medicines, painkillers, and healthy food items.
Crossings that were expected to reopen to humanitarian and medical traffic have remained largely closed. The promised flow of aid has been thin, inconsistent, and often entirely blocked. Meanwhile, mothers like Ahmed's are counting the days in agony.
My son Ahmed was shot in the head near the Netzarim Aid Center. It has been 5 months now. His papers were approved for the medical evacuation, but we are still waiting for the crossing to open. No medical treatment is available for him here. The crossings are sealed and the medicines are not allowed. It is painful watching him deteriorate every passing day.
Today, about 16,000 patients remain trapped, living each day with an acute awareness that their fate may depend on whether medicine manages to get in or they have a chance of medical evacuation.
Until this moment, we lost around 9,000 people who were previously injured and waiting for medical care. But the Israeli regime prevented them and decided their fate by not allowing medical supplies and medical evacuations from the Rafah crossing. After over 1 month of the ceasefire, Israel is still imposing a suffocating siege on the Strip.
Many are bedridden in overcrowded wards. Others are sheltering in tents, carrying their medical files in plastic bags, waiting for a chance that may never come. Behind every number is a person who struggled to stay alive while the Israeli regime sentenced them to die slowly. And for the thousands still waiting, the question remains, how many more must die before finally the help arrives? Ghada Ibrahim, Dar al-Balah City.
For thousands of immigrants fleeing wars and climate change, the promise of refuge in Britain may soon turn into years of uncertainty. After a year that saw some of the biggest race riots and anti-immigration demonstrations in decades, Interior Minister Shabana Mahmood has introduced what she calls the largest overhaul of the asylum system in modern times, an end to automatic routes to permanent settlement. Refugee status, once a 5-year stepping stone to citizenship, will now last just 30 months, and those arriving by what the government calls illegal routes, such as small boats from France, could wait up to 20 years for permanent settlement, all it claims aimed at securing Britain's borders. Migrant rights campaigners say the changes won't work.
This idea of smashing criminal gangs, well, the only way to actually smash these so-called criminal gangs is to give asylum seekers that are currently in France and want to cross the channel to actually give them a safe way of travelling across the channel, because at the moment the criminal gangs are, sorry to use the language, but exploiting the gap in the market created by a lack of, you know, safe routes provided by governments.
The UK takes far fewer asylum seekers than many other countries, like Germany, France, and Spain. The British government says the changes are necessary. Critics say at the heart of it all lies politics.
I think they are a series of gimmicks, really, that are designed to pander to the far-right threat, particularly Reform UK electorally, which is a far-right political party for the first time in British history, is leading in the opinion polls and looking like it could form the next government. So it's designed to pander to the racism of the far right.
Against the backdrop of a backlash from some of Labour's own MPs, the measures will be put to vote inside Parliament. And so inside that building, Labour MPs will be wrestling with a dilemma of their own making, how to be the party of compassion while also increasingly sounding like their anti-immigrant right-wing rivals. Their vote on those changes, a measure of how far they're willing to travel along that route. Saipur is up, London.
Allah, Allah. Allah 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 Allah
Ya Rabbi
Allah Allah
Ya Rabbi
Allah Allah Allah
Hadith of the day.
Here I am yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more.
listening to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, dear brothers and sisters, dear listeners, salam, and welcome to this episode of the Hadith of the Day. So, when we talk about love for Ahlul Bayt, it is often easy to express it in words. But Lady Fatima al-Zahra, salamullah alayha, the daughter of the Holy Prophet, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his holy progeny, gave us a clear definition of what true loyalty means, or call it true tashayyu, true being a true follower of Ahlul Bayt, a true follower of Quran and the Holy Prophet. If you act according to what we have commanded you and refrain from what we have forbidden you, then you are truly among our Shia. Otherwise, you're not. وَإِلَّا فَلَا. Otherwise, you're not. As simple as that, as clear as that. Let me tell you this. To me, it appears that why were they so serious about drawing boundaries of who's Shia, who's a Shia, and who's not? You know that many people, many Muslims today, they are officially called Shia. They say that they are Shia and they are considered to be Shia. But a true Shia in the narrations has to have a series of factors and qualities, and they are mentioned in those narrations. In this narration, this criterion is given. If you act according to what we have commanded you and refrain from what we have forbidden you, then you are a true Shia. Otherwise, not. Why they are so serious about that? They are so clear about that? Because I think the way of truth should be clear, should stay away from any kind of mixture and confusion. Let's say if someone wants to find the truth, the absolute truth, the true way to Allah, true way to God, the only pure true way to which is the correct way in life, and you tell him that, okay, it is in following the Holy Prophet, following Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, in other words, to be a Shia, and they see that a lot of the Shia people who call themselves Shia do a lot of bad deeds. So what would be the outcome? That's why the Ahlul Bayt, they say that, you know, that she being a Shia, true Shia, has a lot of qualities and kind of conditions. If those conditions are met, then you are a Shia. Otherwise, not. So, dear listeners, the only true way to God is in, you know, being a true Shia, to follow Ahlul Bayt and the Holy Prophet and Quran. And that's in having and meeting those conditions, in following them in action, not only words and claim, inshallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
We are with you. What about you?
IRIB English Radio.
Bazaar.
Plants grow and give fruits and flowers when they are in the most ideal circumstances. Proper amount of sun, water, soil conditions, and the right temperature are all the ingredients for a happy plant to grow and do what it does best. These days, being a successful farmer is a much more complicated and demanding profession than in the past. Farmers today not only need to have great agricultural skills, but they also must have exceptional technological and marketing expertise. And the most recent trend in farming are greenhouses.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Bazaar. In this program, we will explore new developments in Iran's vast agriculture industry while shining the spotlight on greenhouses. We wanted to see what all the fanfare is about with this type of farming. Plus, we will also check out how it's making profits in the agriculture sector. So plant yourself in a comfortable seat and let's start the show.
Our journey began at Farakish de Parsian. This company has been around for decades and has a rich history of activity in livestock rearing and farming. Some years ago, it launched a new business specializing in high-tech hydroponic greenhouses. It's an indoor farm with greenhouses built on many hectares of land. Mainly, it grows three types of produce and a variety of tomatoes, peppers, and lettuce. Each year, it may focus on growing a single type of crop, such as peppers. They have perfected Mother Nature indoors through a combination of science and technology married with farming. The goal is to provide sustainable indoor farming solutions that optimize the use of natural resources. Hydroponic greenhouses grow crops in nutrient-rich water, so water management is at the heart of this company. The structures are created with state-of-the-art irrigation systems. Also, rainwater is collected and distributed to plants. Drainage from the plants is gathered in pools where it undergoes a purification process to remove contaminants, then recycled back into the system. But that's not all. Special ventilation systems control temperature and air circulation. The greenhouses are equipped with shades to control natural light, plus they are fitted with heating and cooling systems. This type of farming comes at a time when the country is witnessing unprecedented heat and water shortages, partially because of outdated agricultural practices.
This type of farming is growing in popularity. The technical term for hydroponic farming is controlled environmental agriculture, or simply indoor farming. These greenhouses create precise growing conditions using technological advances like digital monitoring that draw out the best flavors and textures in produce, and they can be built almost anywhere.
Aside from being a major producer itself, this company offers its hydroponic technology to farmers and growers. Plus, it helps them plant their own greenhouses. It gets its seedlings from its own massive nursery. The seeds are hybrids that are imported. Using hybrid seeds helps grow crops that match international quality, which is beneficial when exporting their produce. This company collaborates with research and academic institutions for agricultural research of cash crops, such as saffron and blueberries. The company stands on the threshold of exporting its produce and welcomes foreign investments to expand its activities. As part of their future vision, they are creating a program for on-site training, which helps users of hydroponic technology in glass greenhouses. It Additionally, it is developing lodging and accommodation for national and international agritourists. The most recent addition to their line of work is a packing facility which packages produce and readies them for market distribution. While the U.S. sanctions do not directly cover the agriculture sector, they have indirectly impacted businesses in this industry. Much of the technology used in this company is imported or has spare parts that need to be imported. The sanctions have hindered international money transfers, making imports and even exports of produce for this company difficult.
As you might know, open land farming is vulnerable to environmental changes. Droughts, cold spells, heat waves, and soil erosion all impact harvests. The agriculture sector not only plays a big role in managing food security, but also is a big contributor to the Iranian economy. In recent years, water shortages have slowed development in this sector, which has gained the attention of government officials.
The Ministry of Agriculture defined several programs to develop greenhouses to tackle drought conditions. Right now, the total greenhouse area in the country stands at around 21,000 hectares. Government officials want to increase this amount to 25,000 by the end of the year. This will help support plans of the Ministry of Agriculture to transfer vegetable farms to greenhouses. The main objective is to save 10 billion cubic meters of water annually. Many of these greenhouses are set up in agriculture parks inside free trade zones. In fact, in the Northwest, Aras Free Trade Zone opened one of the biggest hydroponic greenhouse complexes in West Asia. The goal is to increase productions for exports. For this reason, agri-parks have a major role in developing technology to support efficient indoor farming. The government provided nearly $200 million worth of funds for creating agricultural parks and greenhouses last year. And this supportive measure has paid off, as over 4 million tons of fruits and vegetables were produced this year from greenhouses. Tehran province is one of the country's biggest producers of greenhouse products. Yazd, West Azerbaijan, Bushehr, and Khorasan provinces also have numerous greenhouses, just to name a few.
Iranian agriculture has grown by leaps and bounds in recent years. It was one of the only sectors that was barely impacted by the global coronavirus outbreak. Agriculture is not limited to cultivation and farming alone. It also includes dairy, poultry, beekeeping, aquaculture, and so much more. It is considered a strategic sector where goods are enhanced with added value through processing, promotion, and distribution.
Agriculture makes up 8% of Iran's GDP and employs one-fifth of the country's entire workforce. Iran's agro-food products also accounted for around 20% of the country's non-oil exports last year. That's according to the Ministry of Agriculture. Figures from the ministry show Iran has over 18 million hectares of arable land. And last year, nearly 130 million tons of agro-products were produced in farmlands. Iran's agro-industry is worth billions. Data from Iran's Customs Administration show the value of the country's agricultural exports rose by around 3% this year. Its figures also reveal Iran exported some 5 million tons of agricultural products worth nearly $3 billion this year. Around half of the revenue generated from exports belonged to 10 major agricultural products. Championing the top of the export list was pistachio, selling off roughly $540 million worth of nuts. This was followed by watermelon and tomatoes in terms of export value. Horticulture products also generated $1 billion in exports.
All right, everyone, it is time for me to step aside for several minutes as my good friend and colleague is about to take you on another educational adventure. Enjoy.
In a world where our lives are becoming increasingly intertwined with the zeros and ones. We transfer money, we call our friends, and we do our shopping using these two magic numbers that form the foundation of the virtual yet real world that's called IT. Today, I'll walk you around this Iranian company that has a lot to say when it comes to the IT sector. Here, only the impossible is impossible. The motto, which Ida Bonyan Mobtaker Pars has set its targets on, the Iranian brand develops a range of IT and ICT products, from apps and websites to educational content. The idea of launching such a business was developed more than a decade and a half ago in the mind of its CEO, when he was just a high school student.
E-commerce is one of the amazing outcomes of the digital space. The emergence of online shopping has provided an instant link between customers and sellers, where customers can easily window shop and get their hands on their desired items in a tap of a finger.
Minikala is the name of a newbie online shopping app that's developed by the thriving brand. In less than 2 years, the number of Minikala users is rapidly approaching 500K.
Idebunyane Mubtakir Pars is an umbrella company that has under its belt a range of startups, producing apps with different purposes, from money management apps to shopping and medical applications. This is what makes this firm stand out from the ever-growing number of rivals in Iran.
Digital marketing is a newbie business in Iran, but still, there are many companies, Iranian companies, who have stepped into the realm of the digital marketing or e-commerce. Despite its adverse effect on the global economy, when it comes to digital marketing, the coronavirus pandemic was a blessing, making the online space the safest possible channel for people to get their hands on different products. And this company says it fares even better during the pandemic.
With a dedicated team bringing together more than 150 highly driven programmers, Mubtakir says it tries to expand the scope of its activity based on the needs of the day. Otherwise, it would stay behind in the fast-paced market.
Many thanks for that awesome report. And that wraps up our show for today. Until next time, take care. We'll see you again on another episode of Bazaar.
Savior.
Oh, the Savior of mankind, please show us the sign.
To the designer of the human civilization that is established on the unity of Almighty Allah.
Almighty.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum and a very warm welcome. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. This is The Last Savior. I'm your host, Zainab. And we have our special guest, Dr. Ali Alavi. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome, sir.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Dr. Alavi is a scholar in the Hawza Ilmi Afkom and has expertise in the field of Mathawiyat. And today we are going to discuss some very important questions like, Dr. Alavi, you know, people are confused about the arrival of Imam. They say, like, some say we should be providing grounds for his arrival, and some say Imam is going to come when there's a lot of corruption, when there's a lot of injustice. So let this happen more so that Imam comes, and they are silent towards the oppression and other kinds of corruption they see. So which one is correct and why?
Yes, we have in many hadith and narrations that among the signs of the arrival and advent of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam is ظهر الفساد في البر والبحر. That is, the earth and the whole land and even the seas will be full of corruption.
Yeah.
So this might come to the minds of some that, okay, what is our duty in this regard? Should we help this corruption to grow, to be more,
grow
to
more
be advanced?
Or, stop it?
Or no, we have to stop it. And if corruption is bad, so it has to be bad in every era, in every part of the time. So it's not going to be good for some, and I mean, it's going to be good for some other times. But I think there is a sort of misconception or misunderstanding here that needs to be clarified. We have to actually distinguish between the signs of the advent of Imam alayhi salam and the conditions of the arrival and advent of Imam. So the signs of the advent of Imam are the things and the factors that tell us that the advent of Imam is so close, that is going to happen.
Yeah.
And it tells us and it narrates us from its happening and occurrence. So it tells us that, okay, the appearance of Imam alayhi salam, or the appearance of Imam alayhi salam, is approaching, is close, is near. But it is not going to be the condition or the cause of the advent of Imam.
Right.
So we have to distinguish between these two concepts. So
right.
once it's a, just a sign, not a cause, not
right.
the reason for the arrival of Imam. So if it was supposed to be the reason and cause of the arrival of Imam, yes, that kind of conception which says that, okay, we have to help the corruption to happen so that Imam comes earlier.
Yeah.
So that could be, I mean, more understandable. But we want to say that, okay, Imam Ahl Islam wants to come for what? To remove this corruption, to actually to fight corruption, to fight oppression.
Yeah.
So when the earth is full of oppression and corruption, so does it make any sense for us to help this corruption to be more, to be advanced, to grow more? So it doesn't actually make sense. So we want to say that, okay, Imam Ahl Islam, when we are hearing about his arrival and advent, we say that, okay, when the earth has been full of corruption and oppression and different, actually, manifestations of
injustice.
Facade and injustice or corruption. But Imam Ali Islam is going to come to fight with this, with whatever we call it, oppression, corruption, or immoralities.
Yeah.
So is it, I mean, meaningful for us to, okay, let's do whatever Imam Ali Islam wants to come to fight it.
Yeah.
So it's not correct.
Yeah.
So if we say that, okay, in most of, for example, Muslim countries, now we can find bars and centers for selling, I mean, unlawful
alcohol
and haram drinks.
Yeah.
So they actually, they are full of, I mean, let's say corruptions, different immoralities and so on and so forth. Yes, we can even give them more examples and more instances, like the oppression that comes from the side of the so-called superpowers and the Israelis and people in different parts of the world.
We'll give a pause here and we'll continue our discussion after a short break. Dear listeners, don't go anywhere. Stay tuned.
I can feel your eyes like the sun shining behind the clouds. I need a morning to shatter this long night forever. I need a hero to
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is The Last Savior. Dr. Ali Alevi is with us, and we are discussing the signs of the arrival of Imam. For example, one of the signs is that the corruption, injustice, and immorality will be at its peak. And does it make sense to spread corruption? Because if there's a lot of corruption, then the Imam comes. So we reach this point that it does not make any sense, even if it's a sign of Imam, because this is one of the signs that Imam is going to fight with.
Yeah. We were saying, I mean, we actually were enumerating some examples of some corruptions and oppressions in Islamic countries.
Yeah.
Or whatever goes on the Muslims in different parts of the world, let's say. I mean, the most known example is the issue and the case of Palestine and the people of Gaza. So the oppression that comes from Israel on them and the usurper regime of Israel. And other countries, let's talk about other countries even, in Muslim countries, that they are under pressure of American policies.
Yeah.
All the some countries are under the sanctions and economic pressures of American so-called superpowers. And some others are suffering from different, actually, versions of these oppressions.
Right.
So we want to say that where in the world can we see that that ideal justice that we are after, that Imam Ali is going to reappear for?
Right.
So we rarely see the cases of injustice in different parts of the world. Or whatever we see is oppression and corruption and immorality or immoral relations that we see in front of our eyes. But earlier, we have been discussing that what are the conditions of the reappearance of Imam Ali Salam?
Right.
First, public acceptance of Imam Ali Salam. I mean, public acceptance, I mean, by global acceptance of Imam Ali Salam. This is one condition. Second, good companions, loyal companions. So the companions that are good enough and pious and righteous people who are going to be the best companions of Imam Ali Salam to help him with this great cause.
To fight
oppressions. So if we're talking about conditions of the advent of Imam Ali Salam, there are two conditions.
Right.
I mean, first, global acceptance of Imam Ali Salam. Second, his companions, good companions, pious companions, righteous companions.
Yeah.
So these are the conditions. But the corruptions are the signs of, the signs of reappearance of Imam Ali Salam. When corruptions are more, so we have to work on actually bringing up more companions, pious companions.
Right.
So I want to say that bringing up companions or even working on the good ones is not an obstacle to the reappearance of Imam, the advent of Imam. But it's also paving the way for the arrival of Imam Ali Salam.
Indeed.
So we need to actually work on this issue and actually inform and enlighten people that corruption by itself is something bad. So it doesn't mean that, okay, something which is bad, we call it as good and work on it and for the arrival of Imam Ali Salam.
It reminds me of one of the examples, and we will discuss that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
مهديون في الأزمان شع ضياء ربنا في العالمين أضفع له نور آلق والظالم ما ابتده من أجل السالكين أهدى سنه
سنه. Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is The Last Savior. We have a Dr. Ali Alevi, and we are discussing a very important concept. Like one of the signs of the arrival of Imam is that earth will be filled with injustice and corruption and immorality. So should we be silent in the face of immorality and corruption and oppression so that it becomes more and more so that Imam arrives soon? We said no, it does not make any sense because one of the conditions of Imam's advent is the global acceptance and also the loyal, pious, and righteous companions. So those who are loyal, pious, and righteous, they never pave the way for wrong things. It's something like that. Like I was saying, that it reminds me of a story. For example, there was a man who would do robbery and then help the poor. So it's like doing something bad for a good cause. But These are not the conditions in Islam. For a good cause, we don't have to pay. We never go through the bad ways.
Very true. That's it. So we have been asked, to do good. Amru bin ma'ruf wa nahya al munkar. Enjoining good and refraining from the evil. And forbidding from the evil. So this is a principle in our religion. So how is it going to work when, for example, the companions of Imam, the ones who are waiting for the arrival of Imam, are the ones who are actually trying to...
either the silent watchers or themselves spreading
corruption. Yeah, trying to strengthen corruption. Yeah. So it is, I think, a sort of paradox and conflict inside it. And so, no, whoever is good is awaiting Imam alayhi salam, and they are waiting for the good actions and deeds that Imam alayhi salam is going to make dominant in the whole world.
Right.
So we are working for this very important cause of the goodness, the just government of Imam al-Islam, the healthy government of Imam al-Islam, not a corrupted government.
Right.
So in a just and, let's say, health government, there is no corruption. There is not going to be any oppression to the people or to the real owners of the government, that is the people.
Yeah.
So Imam al-Islam comes to change all these wrong worldviews and perspectives.
Right.
So this one of the reasons of the arrival of Imam al-Islam, which is defined under the justice, is this, that the rights of the people are going to be given to them. So one of their rights is to know everything which is their or due.
Right.
So whatever is their own due, they have to know. They have to be informed of whatever is their own rights.
Yeah.
So I want to say that what is being said here, that we need to make sure work on the corruption and to help the corruption to happen, is something which is quite void and
doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense at all. Again, according to this wrong worldview, there is another issue that comes up, that they say, okay, even based on some hadith, any government before the advent of Imam alayhi salam is a wrong government, or let's say a government based on hypocrisy and infidelity. So again, when we think on it, when we see and actually read the hadith and narrations that have that these explanations are based on,
we see
about the baselessness of such claims.
Oh.
So how is it possible, again, that we do not work for the arrival of Imam Ali Salam under a system? Because what is a government? Government is a system.
Yeah.
A system. If a system works properly, we call it government.
Yeah.
So for the sake of people. So why, if, for example, a system is working properly for the advent of Imam Ali Salam, why should it be, a void government, or let's say a wrong government?
Yeah.
Or a hypocritic model of governance,
right.
Or a government of infidelity or kufr. So again, this is something that we need to discuss a little bit, inshallah, in our upcoming sessions.
So since it's a comprehensive topic and the time, the TikTok is on, so it's not in the scope of this episode that we discuss all the things. But so far, I would like to conclude. We said that the we have known that one of the signs is that corruptions, as much as the corruption is more, the earth is filled with injustice, Imam is going to come. But it does not make sense that the righteous people who are believing in Imam and who are waiting for Imam eagerly, they remain silent in the face of corruption, and they remain silent and they help spreading corruption and oppression. Rather, Imam is going to fight against these things, and we also have to make efforts to fight corruption, to fight oppression, that indeed may be providing the grounds for his soon arrival. May Allah hasten the reappearance of our noble Imam. Thank you, Dr. Ali Alavi, for being with us. Thank you, dear listeners. Until another episode, take good care. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam. Where is the rising sun?
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Good morning to all listeners of Iran Radio. Nice to have you with us. Here are some interesting facts about Islam. The Islamic world produced the first skilled, specially trained pharmacists who made their own medicines and worked closely with medical doctors and physicians. A 13th century Islamic writer described the circulation of blood inside the human body some 400 years before this was discovered in Europe. One famous hadith Islamic saying is, Allah is beautiful and loves beauty. Beauty has always been, therefore, very important to Muslims and develops in the virtual arts such as architecture, calligraphy, painting, textile, metalwork, and ceramists were encouraged. We start off this hour's programs with our varied radio productions feature. After that, we have Spotlight, a daily program which covers the most important events happening in the world today. Stay with us for the next hour.
We need today to liberate from mental colonization.
What I think is quite clear is there are divisions and violence and a disenchantment with our society. We can start to work together. We are a great country and a compassionate country.
The West is inside you, your heads, and it destroys you from inside.
I'm in awe of propaganda.
We know that American capitalism is morally right.
The unhealthy dependence of the economy on
slaves. That's what capitalism is.
The West has no more dream. They threaten humanity with the future. That the future will be lost.
3, 2, 1.
U.S. Navy is about to send
a
destroyer
without
there.
Nuclear weapons.
All of our troubles in Asia.
Not so
Mutual
fast.
Attempt.
No wider war.
Government is the problem.
Special operations raid.
The United States has conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden.
He is dead.
The leader of Al Qaeda.
And I think that organization we're going to hear a lot about in the coming days is JSOC.
States does not start fights.
America wins the wars that she undertakes.
I want you to see the United States as the
same. That's what's happening in America right now. Change is what's happening in America.
I'm sick and tired. I am. Every second is better. Bigger and better and stronger than ever before.
See the firemen assembled here, the police officers, FBI agents, and you can see the two towers. A huge explosion now raining debris on all of us. We better get out of the way.
This is not a message of